Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two awesome sponsors I want to mention at the top of the show. One is Shop Locket. You like build a little store there and embed it on your own site. It's really cool. We'll tell you about that later in the show, but it's at shoplocket.com/shoptalk. And of course, Environments for Humans are longtime sponsors and creators of awesome web conferences. They're having the Responsive Web Design Summit, RWD Summit, here coming up very soon that you're going to want to hear about. We'll tell you about that later in the show. But for now, let's kick it off. Been a little bit. I feel like I got a stretch. Check out. Ah!
Hello and welcome to Shop Talk Show, a sound effects podcast all about web design and development. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer.
Hi, everybody.
And we're back with another live show after a telephone pole fire.
Yeah, we had to miss last Thursday. Very sorry, but we're making it up for a Tuesday with our same guest, Jeff Starr. Thanks for joining us, Jeff.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, that was good. Sorry about last week or whatever, but we made it.
Yes.
Oh, it's good. Me and Dave are actually fresh back from Orlando, where we were at In Control, one of our sponsors' events that was super fun, was it not? Yeah?
Oh, man. Best time ever.
Dave actually has a secret Vine of me that he can't publish.
Yep. Some shenanigans were had, I will say that. We closed down a bar. Oops. Yeah. And I met this guy named Big Time Timmy Jim. And he was quite a character. I'm not sure if he is real or not. I don't know. It's kind
of
weird.
He was amazing. I wish we had video of him. Anyway, we have Jeff here. And gosh, I've known Jeff for years and years.
Long time. Yep.
Yeah. Well, back, it came from, well, I just read Jeff's blog. So Jeff's blog is Perishable Press. If you've never heard of it, Jeff, he's just has been blogging about the web for longer than I have, I think.
2006, I think.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. That's a long time blog these days. We're like old timers now. These kids are blogging now that it's
young ones.
They don't even have to install stuff. Do it.
In my mind, Perishable Press is like the first blog ever. I mean, I know there were like movable type and stuff like that before that, but like blogs I went to, it's got to be Perishable Press.
Was it WordPress from day one?
It started with the actual precursor to WordPress, the, what is it, B2 or something?
Oh, yeah.
I forget. The thing
that it was forked from or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah, and then it evolved from there. I got into it, yeah.
That's good. Yeah, and of course, CSS-Strix has always been on WordPress. And Jeff posts about WordPress and Perishable Press, and I did on CSS-Strix, but we kind of agreed at one point that, like, man, it would be nice if there was a more appropriate place to publish all this WordPress-related stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of Jeff's idea, and we ended up writing a book together called Digging Into WordPress. So that's at digwp.com. So that's been years now that's been out. And I helped out with the first couple updates, but Jeff has been keeping it updated vigilantly since then. So.
Yes, 10th edition.
If you bought it on the first day, man, you got a good value. Didn't you? You've got every one of those updates you got for free, although 10 updates.
10 updates for free. Some people have, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I will say this, a compliment, you guys. I still end up on the site, like Dig Into WordPress or Dig WP. Mm-hmm. All the information is like still up to date, which I am surprised because I know the book came out a while ago. Usually it's like abandonware at that point, but, I'm really impressed. I just like, whoa, this is exactly my answer and it's updated. So this is perfect.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Sweet.
Yes.
Jeff, you're keeping up with the WordPress stuff too in various formats, right? Because there's WP Mix now, WP Dash Mix for these people. Mm-hmm. Jeff helped Smashing Magazine with their WP.smashingmagazine.com. That's still true, right?
Yes. Yes, yeah. Correct.
So you're like a WordPress all over the place.
Yeah, there's a lot of it. I'm trying to do other stuff too. And that HT Access book that got me into some other stuff. And then, you know, for now it's WordPress, and we'll see how it goes. WordPress is definitely something that I use every day, so I might as well share what I learn.
Yeah. It's a lot different than back in the day. I still use it. I'm, you know, I use it more and more now that I've been kind of on my own and working on CSS tricks and stuff and making new areas of the site. I'm doing this all in WordPress, and it's just, it feels a lot different of a world than it was when I
wrote the book. Yes, it does. It has. It's changed in many ways, I think.
Yeah. For the better, always.
Almost. Yes, of course.
Good stuff with the, I don't know. My jam lately has just been how awesome it is to use WordPress out of the box, but then use the plugin. Advanced Custom Fields is so awesome, and the Custom Post Formats or whatever Custom Post Types plugin. So then you just in a fresh install, you're like, okay, these are the types of pages that I'm gonna need on this app, because it's, chances are these days it's more than just post and page. You'll probably want to define a few that are specific to your site. Be like, okay, I'm just going to define a few, and then go open up Advanced Custom Fields and be like, these ones that I just invented, they have all these different fields. Mm. And it's so cool.
Yeah, it's very flexible, very nice.
If I'm going to like do a page that's a video, I'll have Advanced Custom Fields set up to be like, okay, well, here's the video file, here's the YouTube embed, here's the Vimeo embed or whatever, here's the playing length and all that stuff. Advanced Custom Fields gives you this really nice API to get at that. Now, I don't know. I just think it's so awesome these days. And the media uploading is so awesome.
Yeah, that really took a jump ahead, I think, with the last version. And then
you just quickly, you mentioned the HT Access book, but we've mentioned that before on the show too. So WordPress uses mostly WordPress runs on Apache servers, although you can hack it up to work on Nginx. But most, 99.9% of WordPress installs are just on some Apache server. And the way that the URLs and the routing in WordPress works is largely powered by this simple little HT Access file, which I'm sure most people have worked with WordPress are familiar with, but it's quite a strange language. And that's maybe some of the best, you know, old school stuff that gets referenced on Perishable Press so much, is your HTSS tricks and all that stuff.
Yes.
And you ended up writing a whole book on it.
Yeah. I, you know, for 6 years or so, I'd wanted to write a book, and I'd done some posts on HTSS security and optimization and performance stuff. And it just, you know, I had a summer where there was plenty of time, so I decided to go ahead and just put that together. And I wanted a resource that was kind of, you know, a go-to resource for people who didn't have it all memorized and could go and look and see. If they just had a quick task, they could just look in the table of contents, find it. It's also available online, but a lot of people, I think, like to have a more of a reference.
Nice. So the book is, you can just read it for free online, or if you buy it, you can
access. No, but a lot of the HT Access stuff is available elsewhere on the web. I mean, it's like you said, it's the oldest, one of the oldest, most well-referenced languages. So there's a lot of documentation on it, but it's kind of all scattered all over the place.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So if anybody wants to, I think it may be one of the only books on HTXS.
Yeah, it's the last time I checked, it was. So
there you go. If you need to, an entry point into the voodoo that is HTXS, check out htxsbook.com.
Yes. Yes.
All right. How about some drama, Dave?
Oh, yeah, man. We are chock full of hot drama this month, I guess, since we've last been on the air. The first one that I want to talk about is Opera recently announced that they're going to WebKit. Hello. This is like my dream come true, but I'm a jerk, though.
So we know where you stand on this particular issue. So just to get the facts right, are they, just because I'm not sure I know all the facts exactly, is it going to be everything, or is Opera Mini still going to hang out with its little proxiness, or is, you know what I mean? And then there's like Opera Mobile, right? So Opera Mobile is going to go to WebKit also, and their desktop stuff?
Yeah, I think that's the plan. I don't know if the Opera Mini proxy stuff, I mean, because really, I would imagine they kind of go to some fork of WebKit, but really they just kind of send down like a small file of, you know, like a kind of manipulated page, right? So
yeah, how I understand it is that it's kind of like a PDF of a website, kind of.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of going away because smartphones are getting smarter for the most part, you know, but there is that like data limitation that people want to use Opera Mini for. So, but yeah, I don't know what's happening there, but more or less their Presto engine is being sunset. So it's going away, which it's really interesting to me. You know, Opera kind of stands for the open web, right? It's, you know, it's the fourth browser that you have to check, you know, or fifth. But like, it's, you know, and it's all about open web standards and following web standards. And, but at the same time, it's like a proprietary engine, you know, that makes it a little weird. That's a little weird to me, but, I'm glad they're using me personally. I don't know. I just feel like WebKit's, that's going to save them so many hours and repetitive development and stuff like that just to switch over to WebKit. But I mean, sad to the people who worked on Presto. They maybe some dudes got cut or left because of that. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
You guys have thoughts?
What do you got? I don't know. I think letting the guys go is a bummer. But this is also the best economy ever for web developers. So it's not like those guys won't be able to be employed or I say guys, but you know what I mean. Employees, that won't be a problem. Could work anywhere. I invented the internet. Yeah, hopefully. But there's been lots of thoughts on this. This is a blow to the world of browsers because now there's less competition on them, and competition drives innovation. And we need browser engine diversity. It's what makes the web, or you know whatever. I'm trying to conjure these the this is a huge problem kind of arguments, which I can understand, but the exact opposite of that is the kind of why are we competing on standards? Isn't that kind of a bummer? Can't we spend our time, I don't know, innovating around this core set of this core rendering engine that gets it the most right now?
Yeah.
I don't really care.
I mean, I still feel like we have a, you know, Gecko and Trident, IE's rendering engine, you know, in like, you know, you put all those three together, we have enough quirks to like
last a lifetime.
To last, yeah, exactly. But I think the fear is this is a domino in that Gecko will soon go away too. And but I don't know. Firefox is pretty darn good. So always has
been. So is Trident now in 10.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, Trident's closed source, so that's the only closed source engine. So that might even be, I, you know, maybe IE10 is the next domino to fall or something like that. Who knows? But, it would seem Microsoft's pretty prideful about the IE engine.
Even if they all, what would happen if they all fell? Would it be that bad? I mean, in that theoretical world, which will never happen, probably knock, knock or whatever. You still have teams working on those engines and putting patches together and competing on what it's like to use that browser. It's still a pretty cool world. In fact, it might be a little better. You could make the argument that it would be better.
Right.
It would be better.
There you have it. That's an opinion. Jeff says it would be better. It would be better.
It would be better, yes.
I'm pro WebKit mostly because, and this is happening right now in the chat room, people are visiting with Firefox and they, like, our live stream can only broadcast in MP3, right? But, like, for whatever reason, Opera and Firefox have chosen to only support WebM and Ogg Vorbis. And it's like, cool, two things no one on the internet uses. So, I mean, I don't know. I know it costs money to get licenses and stuff like that, but man, it just,
I don't think that's WebKit. Yes, that's the problem. It kind of is, right? But you could, as a company, if you're Microsoft, theoretically, you could use WebKit and you could, because it's an open source engine, you could pay the MP3 licensing fee or whatever it is and put it and make WebKit use it or what, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? I know it already works in it, but just because WebKit doesn't mean that these licensing restrictions are the place. It's more like the company involved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know.
Next.
Next. Well, the next. Okay, cool. There we go. Oh, there it goes. Oh, did that go through?
Good enough.
Yeah.
Oh, is it not broadcasting? Ugh. Lame. I think I broke the soundboard. Awesome. Cool. I just broke a digital piece of software. Here we go. So the next bit of hot drama was the women in tech stuff hit a boiling point. Sarah Parmenter wrote a post that you kind of have to read called Speaking Up, and we can post that in the show notes. And then that was followed up by a bunch of other people, notably Leslie Jensen Inman posted, and they were just talking about what it's like to be a woman speaker at a conference. And Sarah had just a terrible story where this dude spamming the Event Apart chat room and like posting like Photoshop pictures of her naked and stuff like that, like horrific, right? And then Leslie Jensen Inman is talking about how when she was presenting, people weren't talking about her, what she was talking about. They're talking about what she looked like, her outfit and stuff like that. And, you know, it's just kind of weird, like, that this attitude persists in tech. And I guess to follow that up, Jen Lucas, who's been on the show, and some of the girls at Happy Cog have put together a website called Ladies in Tech, and it's kind of to encourage women to speak in tech. So if you're a woman and you'd like to speak in tech, go check that out. Because, I don't know, and if you're a dude who's a scumbag, you need to stop it. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes, I agree.
It's never happened to me. So that makes sense. It doesn't make sense, but you know what I mean? I can feel their pain, you know, like I get to speak at these events and nobody's ever a huge jerk to me, but it's just cause I,
yeah. Don't be a jerk.
Yeah. Oh, let's talk about happier things. Joel. So Joel has, the last name is Glovier. So he has the ER problem that I have in my last name. So it's either if he pronounces it like I would, it would just be Joe Glovier or Glovier. But if he's more French than I am, it'd be Glovier. Yeah.
Hey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Has a Kickstarter called DevTease. You can just Google DevTease. And I said I'd mention on the show because it's cool and he's a nice guy and he's collecting money and he's going to make some shirts for nerds and print them up and mail them out.
That was happy awesome.
About Great him. Job.
That's cool.
Let's get into the Q&A. We got Jeff Starr here and he's a WordPress master and master of many other web technologies. Let's get his opinion on as many questions as we can here before the world runs out here. But I think maybe we should do a sponsor just quick before that, as if that's okay.
Yeah, let's do a sponsor.
Yeah. So shoplocket.com. I told you about it in the beginning of the show. They have, so imagine, you know, you shoot a movie and you put it on YouTube. It's on YouTube and that's great, but you can also embed it all over else on the web. You can put it on your blog or your Facebook page or whatever. That's what shoplocket. Oh gosh, I almost said Shop Talklet or something, which would be awesome. So obviously delicious. They have an excellent go to shoplocket.com/shoptalk, which will give them the right referrer, so you know we stay in business or whatever. The easiest way to sell products online, you set up a store there, and then they give you this like embeddable chunk that you go put on your own site or wherever else. So your store comes with you wherever your own web presence is on the store. So it collects PayPal or Stripe, and you get a 2.5% transaction fee on the deal. So on the things that you sell. But if you use that URL, shoplocket.com/shoptalk, you get 3 months without that transaction fee at all. So that's cool. That's what you get from being an awesome Shop Talk show listener. But if you're trying to sell something online and you want to kind of bring that store with you all around the internet, ShopLocket is the thing to use for that. So they're our first time sponsor on Shop Talk. So we do a good job, everyone. And and go visit the URL and check them out. It's a, even if you don't even care, but you're interested in like what a good product page design looks like, shoplocket.com is like a really nicely designed looking page. It looks like it's going to have parallax and then it doesn't. Awesome surprise.
I love it. I love it already. I think this is pretty sweet. I'm just like, it just seems like, you know, when you try, you're going to sell stuff, like you guys sell books, you know, you're going to go sell like a book you wrote. You spent like 8 months writing this book and then you're like, oh crap, we have to build a website for it, you know? Mm-hmm. And this can like just get you going, you know, like straight to the money maker. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I like it. I like things that remove barriers like this does.
Awesome. Well, cool. I wanted to kick off the Q&A here, the meat and potatoes, with a little question, if you guys don't mind.
Yes.
Hey, okay, the question is, what's a scuba diver's favorite element? Sub.
Waka, 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 waka. Hey, waka, waka. Ah, waka, waka, waka.
Is it cold in here? Is it?
It's been a while, Dave. It's been a while.
You know, I got some more if you're interested.
One more, Dave.
So this one comes from Andy Unleash in the chat room. He said, why did the submarine sink? Because they didn't check their viewport.
Man.
Oh,
wow. Oh. That one might be a work in progress. Anyhow, this is good, guys. All right.
Magnus Von Bromson asks, can you recommend a new CMS for me? I've used Expression Engine for a couple of projects now, but with their new policy, which we talked about in previous shows, I don't even remember what it's all about, but a lot of people don't like it. I don't think it's worth the price tag anymore. It's a great CMS that really suits my way of building websites. First, create static web pages and then add Expression Engine tags. Okay, but he doesn't like it anymore. Is the right choice WordPress? Is there a better alternative? I'd really like to go with Ruby on Rails, but it seems like a bit more complicated and limited hosting providers, yada, yada, yada. So there's a lot there in that question. Magnus von Bromson loves EE, but is mad or doesn't like it anymore, whatever. Mm-hmm. He's thinking about WordPress. What's the deal?
I would say try WordPress. It has a lot to offer, but you know there are a lot of other CMSs out there that can do amazing things too, like ModX, I really like, and Frog.
Is ModX more like EE?
Actually, I can't speak for EE. I haven't used it too much.
Okay.
I've used some of the smaller ones and then WordPress and then haven't had time to really get into like Expression Engine or Drupal. I've used a little bit of Drupal and Joomla, but found it to be, it require more time than I had available.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things where I would say a not good use of your time is installing every one of these CMSs and learning it and going through the whole learning curve of how that CMS works. It's like they all kind of do the same thing in the end of the day. They might do it in slightly different ways, but like, man, if you're really good at Expression Engine, to me, when I read this, I was like, Magnus, it's $100 for EE, I think. Isn't that right? It used to be. Something like that, though. It's not like $1,000. What really changed that makes you not like it so much? Like, what is it about this policy that you don't think is it? And if the price tag is $100, that just seems like such a... I know that's not nothing. It's not a dollar. But it's like, if you're making this big website for someone, it seems like that kind of level of... That price shouldn't be a make-or-break scenario. I don't think that should factor in that heavily.
Well, for some people, I think it does, or for some projects. But yeah, if you're going to get, you know, if you're going for it online with something big,
then right? If you're making $500 off a site and you're going to lose 20% off of that.
Yeah, right.
But man,
I think with EE, and this is, I mean, I don't use EE, so like take this with a grain of salt. There's a lot of kind of de facto plugins that you have to install that also cost money. So your kind of standard install is more in the like $500 price range, you know, which can really eat into somebody, or somebody in the chat room saying it's $299 base price. So, but.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Wow.
So
I was wrong.
So, like it's, I think it's just kind of the de facto thing, you know, for every website you're doing. And I don't think they have like a developer thing anymore or something. Again, I don't know. I'm not good at this. We'll have to bring like Ryan Ireland on or something. But I don't know. I think WordPress is great. People in the chat room, I'm just going to like just read
list
the chat
a few.
Room.
Yeah.
Anchor CMS, Git Symphony, Leaflets, Pyro CMS. I think there was more. Oh, that's all.
Concrete but, Five.
Like, yeah.
Kirby Perch.
Dot.
Yeah.
Yeah, get Kirby.
There's a million of them is the point, yeah. Right?
Refinery, Cake PHP.
I agree that $299 is starting to feel like an awful lot to pay for a one-off instance of EE. And that yeah, with so many of these options, yeah, you could probably do better. Certainly you're not going to like be like pick WordPress and super regret it and be like, "Oh, what a disaster."
Yeah.
Clearly, right? It powers a ton of the internet.
There are plugins that cost money, and you know, themes for WordPress. You know, yeah. It is possible to get into, you know,
yeah,
costs.
A pricey situation. Yeah. It mentions at the end, though, I'd like to get into Ruby on Rails, but it seems a bit more complicated. That was the last part of the question. Now, Ruby on Rails isn't a CMS; it is a framework. You could build a CMS on it if you want to, and I've often heard about Ruby on Rails that like conspicuously missing. Is the like quintessential CMS for Ruby on Rails. Like mm-hmm. I bet there's a few cracks at it rolling around, but there definitely isn't just like the one. Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Ruby's more for app driven development. You know, there's not like a blogging engine, that you just, there is one, but it's not that great compared to like WordPress. So, I think you should, if you want to learn Ruby, learn Ruby, but that learning curve is huge and then it breaks every update they have. So, careful there. Careful in those
waters.
We're
just going to say try WordPress, and if you don't like it, try something else.
Yeah, lots of options.
Cool. We got an audio one here from Emily Spence Place, who we met at In Control, and I've met before, but you know.
Really nice. This is a good question. Here we go.
Hi, guys. My company is in the process of hiring a new front-end dev. I'd like to start asking applicants to submit samples of their code or solve some problem within an allotted amount of time. For example, I have a friend who was recently given 2 days to refactor some code before his interview, and I think it's a great idea. However, I'm unsure where to start. Do you have any resources or advice? Thanks in advance, and I'll see you both at In Control.
Awesome. So the question is, hiring a new front-end, what kind of things like resources would you offer or to have them do challenges?
How would you spot somebody who's a decent front end coder?
Somebody who communicates well and understands the nature of the work. I would start there and then look at specific skill sets and see if the skill sets are matching what we need to do. If it's e-commerce or if it's, you know, more on the aesthetic design side of it. I guess wait a minute, we're talking about UX here, right? Or just the front end stuff?
Yeah. I think just front end coding, so HTML, CSS,
she
JavaScript.
She specifically
probably.
Says front end.
Okay,
dev.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. I think that Chris would probably be better suited to answer that. I don't know.
Well, have you ever hired somebody?
Yeah, no, I haven't.
Neither have I, really. I've been in situations where people around me are getting hired, but I've never conducted an interview ever.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so we're not maybe the best. I mean, think of the answer from somebody who does this all the time would be fascinating. We should probably get that person on. But I do have some resources I could point you towards and some ideas. For one, Darcy Clark has a blog post about this called Front End Job Interview Questions. and it's just a blog post, and I'll post it in the chat room, but I'll put it in the show notes as well. That's just this huge list of like stuff you can ask. Let me just read a few of them. HTML specific questions. What does a doc type do, and how many can you name? I mean, that maybe that's getting a little outdated, but what are data dash attributes good for? Consider HTML5 as an open web platform. What are the building blocks of HTML5? Describe the difference between cookies, session storage, and local storage. Now, those are kind of like really nuts and bolts questions that you could, like, if you need to vet somebody and you need to know what they know, you're going to have to ask them some specific stuff at some point. You know, if they don't know the answer to every single one of these, that's fine. Maybe they've never used local storage or cookies. That's fine. And the more they're a visual designer, I wouldn't say they would need to get every single one of these absolutely correct, but these type of questions can give you a sense of what people know. And maybe if they get one wrong, maybe the follow-up question could be like, I'm going to give you 2 minutes to figure it out so you can get a sense of how good they are at Googling stuff.
Yes.
Because that's a skill all in itself.
Yes.
Certainly. Because, you know, the best of – I've said this before. Some of the best even developers that I know, it's a day-long process of knowing what you need and then Googling it and finding an example and pasting it into the thing and changing it for your own project. And that's what we do all day long is Google stuff and copy and paste stuff.
Yeah.
Largely, you know, like I feel ridiculous sometimes, but I jump back and forth lately between PHP and JavaScript and Ruby. And I sometimes just totally blank on how to do a for loop because they're slightly different between all of them. And I just will Google it quick and I'll copy one and I'll paste it and I'll change it to what I need. Like there's no way I could work at Google. Because you can't not have a for loop memorized in all those languages. You'd be laughed at. But I don't. I can't. It doesn't make me suck. It just means
there's a lot to know.
Yeah.
There's so much to know. And it's just nice to have a search engine that can find everything. Whether it's Google or some other search engine, having that information available online is, I think it makes a lot of people's jobs possible.
Amazing.
I would fail every like interview question thing I've ever seen, which maybe like Trent Walton should rehire me or something, re-interview me. But I would say I had a friend who went into a interview and they gave him a marker and sent him over to a whiteboard and said like, all right, write this out in jQuery or whatever. And he's just like, I mean, I know this stuff, but it's weird on a whiteboard. You know, it's just weird. And you don't have access to the API for just, you know, oh, yeah, what's the difference between HTML and text or something like that? So I would say don't do that. I don't feel like whiteboard stuff is a very good, you know, example of what somebody can do. That's my opinion.
I agree with that.
That's why stuff like your GitHub commit history is so awesome. For people say like, oh, that's better than any resume. It's your GitHub commit history. Not everybody has all that. I mean, I do tons of commits every day on GitHub, and a lot of it's to private repos. So my public profile isn't probably all that awesome. But still, you know, if it is awesome, that says a lot about you. And just examples, the first thing Jeff said was good communication. That was the first thing that you said, and that's so, so important to me, too. Mm-hmm. Like, if you've demonstrated that you can write an email that I can understand, you're already, like, that's pretty high up there.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's such a, for whatever reason.
And email is tricky, too. It's an art. There's a lot to it.
Yep. Yep. And your enthusiasm. You know, mm-hmm. So you're seeming like if you're super into it, you're probably more valuable than somebody who's like really smart, but a bit of a curmudgeon or slow or whiny or jerk.
Oh, yeah, it all comes through. There's a way to pick up on all of that when you're reading somebody's, you know, through email or through text. You can get a lot about a person. And I think a lot of people send emails without bothering to even read them.
Read what you wrote.
Yeah. I mean, it's not always necessary, but you know, working as editor at Smashing Magazine, there's a lot of people who want to write and a lot of great articles that come in, but you can just kind of tell that it might be better to keep some distance because of assumptions and things that are made, you know, that come out in the email. So, you know, there's a lot to it. The dynamics, I think, the more important the emails become, you know?
Yeah. There's an art. There should be more books about that subject. Not sucking at email.
No, that's so tedious though, you know, checking things and.
Yeah. But everybody's got a treasure trove of bad ones to use as.
That would be a good book. Yeah. Bad emails.
My favorite is the, do you want this or that? And they just say, yes. Like sent from iPhone. Like, come on. This is going to take 6 days.
All right, let's do one more, and then I'm going to tell you about the Responsive Web Design Summit, which is pretty cool.
Cool. Jeff, do you use SaaS? Are you a SaaS guy?
I don't use it all the time. I use it when it's, you know, when it's going to save time on something huge or, you know, larger time intensive project. But if it's just the stuff that I'm working on for myself, I don't have a need for it. I just prefer the pure CSS. I enjoy working with it.
Sweet. Okay. So I'll skip this question and I'll go to the next one.
Yeah. I knew there'd be questions about less and SaaS. And, you know, I can't even say I wish I used them more, but, you know, I just don't have a lot of feedback.
No, it's no big deal.
No, I'm just like, wait, this one's a nerdy one. Let's make sure we wanted to talk about that. Okay,
it's so pretty Tim good, Albert, though. We'll hit it up later.
We'll hit it up. Tim Albert wrote in and said, what is your workflow for deploying changes while developing locally and using a version control system such as Git?
I put this in there for the same reason I put the last one in there, just to kind of get Jeff's, just so we can hear what to, because yeah, you manage a lot of domains now, Jeff. So
yeah. So. I don't use Git. I use my own system that I have that is based on whether or not it's based on the project and what I'm doing to the project. For a quick update, I have, you know, one protocol that I use, and then if it's going to be something where it's more extensive, then I have a different protocol, and I'll just go in there and, you know, it'll be the entire it's a homebrewed system that I do not want to bore everybody with, but it works very well for me.
Nice. Cool. And so it's never Mercurial or Git or SVN or anything.
No. It, like when, you know, the SVN at WordPress.org,
yeah.
or working with different clients use different subversion systems, you know, Git, or some people use like Dreamweaver, or some people... You know, it just depends on who I'm working with and what they want to do or what they need to do. I don't swear by any one system. Cool. You know, there's pros and cons to each one, I think.
So Tim here is using Git, let's say, let's you know, put a point on it. And then he's saying, you know, Git is just version controlled. Git doesn't give you deployment, which is that moving this repository of files to where it needs to go on a live server, you know? So, like, version control and deployment are, like, separate things.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim's asking, let's say I use Git, what do you then use for deployment? So, maybe, Dave, you use Git sometimes. What are the different ways that you've...
I guess the same answer as Jeff, kind of. It depends on what I can get away with, you know? If it's just static HTML... you use Git and then you create a like GH pages branch and you upload that and it's online and it works.
Oh, I see. Right. So in Git, you have a master branch, which is the default branch. But if you make a branch that's specifically called GH, which is GitHub dash pages, automatically in your GitHub account, that repo.yourname.com, the repo.yourgithubname.com is the index.html file from that repo. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you like get a free web page out of your repository and you did nothing.
Yeah. So that's one. Number two, you can do something like, okay, so you're working with your thing. You download, there's these rake tasks in Ruby, and basically a rake task is basically like a shell command that will do one specific thing, like rake check links will check to make sure you have all your links in your file. Rake test will run your tests on your file. It's kind of a Ruby concept. But I have a, I've been using a rake task that will use rsync to basically, just like you'd sync, your time machine or your backup drive, you know, it basically syncs your folder with the one on the server and, or, and it like yours is the master and then it pushes out to the remote slave server.
And it's smart somehow. It only pushes the things that it knows it needs to.
Yeah, it just finds, oh, this file is different. This file is different. So I'm going to send up this file, which, you know.
You think it would know that from the Git, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's not explicitly tied to Git. So, so yeah, it's kind of, you have to, like you were saying, Chris, you have to kind of decouple Git from version control a little bit, or sorry, Git from deployment. Like, but there's a lot of good options there. And rsync's really just fancy FTP. You could even have an FTP there, but the important thing is that you're developing locally. So you're not breaking and widening out a site. Another thing, here's my last one. Little known fact, Heroku supports PHP. So in theory, you can like send up, you know, a PHP site, like a Kirby CMS or something like that, you know, up to, Heroku, you would just have to, you, there's like, you have to pick a specific server, but then, you know, I was showing it to a client, they wanted it, a site online that they could test on devices and stuff. And I just type in git push Heroku master.
Yeah, instead of git push origin master, which you would for GitHub, right? You just put git push Heroku master and it pushes it to Heroku, and Heroku is your deployment.
Yep. And it's live and it works. So, and then like I shop talk, we're using Beanstalk. There's kind of a 50 different things.
Yeah. I was going to say there's like kind of a mama bear, like it as I am prone to do, make it the like three bears thing. I would say like baby bear is something like Beanstalk, which is a Git repository in the cloud. And then you just give it your FTP info like you would if you're using Coda or something. And Beanstalk will deal with deployment for you. It will just move the files. That's like the easiest way because it's this really nice online UI. Baby bear or mama bear would be something like, you know, a lot of people had to install Git locally to get it to work at all, which is just a series of command line things that you type in to install Git locally. Well, if the hosting that you bought has command line access, which it mostly they do, you could run those same commands on the server. Now you have Git on the server as well, right? Cool. Mm-hmm. And then you just get you put an SSH key on your server, which can be a little weird. But then you've given your server now access to your GitHub repository, just like your local do. And then you write a cron job, which a lot of servers have like a UI for, like make a cron job that runs this command every 5 minutes. You make a cron job that just Git pulls every 5 minutes. So now you have deployment based on your server is just asking for the files from that repository every 5 minutes. So you kind of have deployment. It's weird because it's like reverse deployment or something. Mm-hmm. The server's just asking more. That would be like mama bear because that would take you a little while to set up, but not that long. You know, you get it. And the harder way would be to set up, like if you're like a server dude, is the open source project Capistrano is kind of the big daddy as far as deployment, and it does more than deployment. It does all kinds of server control. I think I don't necessarily understand all of it, but that would be more complicated. That would be the hardest core thing you could do. I think that covers it.
Yep.
Nerdy stuff, yeah. Nerdy stuff. And I'm not even sure I'm that qualified to talk about all that stuff. But I want to tell you about one more thing. Environments for Humans sponsors this podcast. They have a conference coming up, and this is their bread and butter, are these online conferences. So you don't even have to fly anywhere. They're less expensive because of it, but they have all the best speakers for all this stuff. So if you're interested in responsive web design, which how could you not be, they have RWD Summit. rwdsummit.com. It'll redirect you to the homepage for this thing. It's 3 full days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, April 16th, 17th, 18th. On one day is kind of all about performance, which is so great, right? They're not just talking about, you're not just going to learn about media queries and the kind of the, you know, fluid grids or whatever, the basics of responsive web design. We're talking, it's much wider topic than that. It's, you know, building websites and all these devices and all the important stuff that you need to consider when you do that. Performance being huge. There's going to be a whole day focused around performance. A whole day focused around strategy of it, and then a whole day on like general technical issues that are around responsive web design. So if you use Shop Talk as a coupon code, you get 20% off of registering for that. But wow, 3 full days, you can just sit on your own couch and watch it and participate and chat. There's actually more chat happens during these online ones because there's a dedicated chat room for it. Actually, a little bit more audience participation at these than there are at live conferences. Anyway, that's all I got for that. Let's. I think we can squeeze in a couple more questions, huh?
Heck yeah! Yes. Go ahead.
Oh, I'll pick one. Let me pick one.
Yes. Your turn.
Yep. Oh God, I've heard Alan May. I've heard several questions on the show about how do I get started in this business. Well, what about looking for a mentor to help you? You can learn just as much by helping someone teaching as you can by learning. I remember hearing an interview on the SitePoint podcast before it, I think that's defunct now, representing a website offering a student mentor connection. For the life of me, I can't find it anywhere. If somebody knows of it, put a link and we'll put it in the show notes. Basically what Alan is saying here is that Alan has 15 years of experience in IT skills and he's looking to take on a student. So that's kind of cool. And I said that I would mention that in the show because it's kind of like he thinks that this student-mentor relationship is an awesome way for learning kind of on both sides. He has things to teach and you can learn from your students certainly as well. So I thought I would throw that out there. And kind of that general question is, how do I get started in this business? I would toss over to Jeff so we could maybe hear his origin story.
Well, I wasn't trained professionally in web development or design. I got into it because I was into graphic design and wanted a way to share that online. And in building my first site back in like 2000 or 2001, you know, it was just horrible, but I was really fascinated by it. And then I just started learning as much as I could. So for me, I would say if it's something you really want to do, then you will find a way to do it. I remember buying books, any book I could get my hands on, and just devouring it and then writing about the different techniques. And, you know, I don't remember all of it, but it really helped along the way as I was learning how to put everything together and do all this back, you know, in the Wild West, back when things were, you know, a lot less well documented. But if you really want to do it, then it's something you'll be able to do if it's given to you to do. But if you're getting into it because you think it's glamorous or, you know, for the wrong reasons or because of the money or whatever, you know, then yeah, you'll want to go through those channels that have been set up, school and whatnot and certificates and degrees and training.
It's kind of I kind of lost it, but like your motivation came from within. And if your motivation is just money or something else, you might need to pay for some external motivation.
Yeah. There is a prescribed way that society has given us to get to where we want to go. And then there's the do-it-yourself method. And that's something I've always admired about you, Chris, is that you've just always done things. And, you know, I don't know about your education or anything like that or training, but I do know that when you want to do something, you just go and, you know, it happens, you know, whether
well,
it's
you
a,
too.
Yeah. So that would be my advice is just, you know, if it's something, it depends on the person.
That's great. Yeah. Getting started is just, I like the idea that motivation comes from your own, from within, and you just got to learn what you need to learn to get it done, which is indeed the Just Build Websites mantra that we hold around here.
Ooh. Do you guys think there's room for like a formalized student mentor sort of, I don't know. It's like, is it a web app?
I don't know. It would be kind of like online dating sites, right? Like there's kind of more of one than the other. Usually there'd probably be a lot more students than mentors.
That's kind of where we're at right now online, where there's a lot of people in forums and whatnot asking. I know I receive a lot of email, and I try to help a lot of people for free when they ask questions about, you know, whatever. Anything I can help with, I try to, but there's not always time. And I think you're right, man. I think there is a serious imbalance between the people who know and have information and people who are getting started and just want to find out.
Yeah.
How to,
I like that, though. I like that a forum is this in a way, in that one smart mentor can actually have quite a few students on it in the context of a forum.
Absolutely.
I heard about this on the BizCraft podcast, but Dan Mall, he was formerly at Big Spaceship, but now he's got his own agency. He's doing this really cool thing where he's taking, like, he plays basketball with some dudes in town, you know, and then he basically takes these kids and he's like, hey, I'm going to teach you how to use Photoshop and make websites. And so these kids who otherwise don't have, like, the skill, he's basically giving it to them and giving them, like, professional Dan Mall style training. I think that's really awesome. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be really cool if we could kind of start leaning in that direction. Maybe every sort of shop, or whether you're like 1, 2, or 20 dudes, maybe you're taking on a person who would have no access to this. I'm, you know, like, there is something like to mentor like a kid who, you know, makes websites in their dorm room, you know, that's cool. But like, maybe it's kids, we find mentees, is that what the students, whatever, mentees, who like have no access to our existing community. You know, they don't even know what Stack Overflow is. So I that's maybe a little more altruistic and like hippy dippy, but I just think that's kind of pretty radical in terms of how we could diversify our community. So I like that.
Yeah. I'm starting with my own kids. I have two kids, a boy and a girl, ages 15 and 9. And I remember teaching my daughter, who is 9, Photoshop, and she was 4 or 5. I mean, kids can pick it up so easy when they're young. It's really neat to see. It's really neat to see them do stuff and stuff that I would never think of. And then, you know, they lose interest and pick it back up or whatnot. But you can always start, if you're interested in helping other people, you can always just start with those who are around you. You know, if you have relatives or friends who have kids, you know, show them where things are on the web and kind of help them maybe ease into it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I would eventually like to teach. And right now I'm working with the college here in town to kind of go over their syllabus for their, they're introducing, I live in a small town and they have a, you know, it's a great college and they're doing a, they're introducing web development and design into the curriculum, and they want, I have the honor of looking at that and, you know, making suggestions and things. And I hope that that's a way that I can get into maybe teaching. I would like to, you know, teach students and, you know, at any level, high school or college, I guess would be fun to teach a class.
Do you have to get a master's?
That's the thing. Yeah. That's the thing right there, is that I don't want to, I have a bachelor's, but I don't want to go back to school. I found what I like to do. And I just feel like to go back to school to get a master's in something that I already know how to do would just be silly.
Yeah. Maybe you can get an honorary master's.
Or, well, just to have that piece of paper, that gets back to what I was saying about the prescribed way that, you know, society is set up a way, and it involves getting a master's if you want to teach. So I guess I'll have to do that if I want to, you know, get in
perhaps there. Perhaps, or you can just be a, you know, I'm sure there's some kind of like just title you can get that, like there an assistant be. Professor or whatever, where you basically teach it, but you just don't have the thing.
Yeah. Or even just being there for a day or whatever.
Unless your goal is to become, you know, what do they call that? Tenured or whatever. You'll probably never get that.
No, I just think it's fun to help people learn and to watch that light bulb go off and then to see what they go off and do. You know, I love seeing new stuff online. It's the best.
Yeah. Let's finish off with a nerdy one.
Sure. This one from Jack here.
I think it's
all right,
nerdy.
Here we go.
I haven't listened to it.
It says it's about attribute selectors. It's an audio question, our favorite kind of question here at the show.
You have a great posting on these at CSS Tricks, but would you consider taking a run through attribute selectors just for fun with maybe some use cases? Thanks.
Okay, so it was pretty open-ended.
That was really concise.
Yeah.
That was
so, I don't know. What is an attribute selector, Jeff?
It's a CSS selector that targets the attribute of an element.
Yeah, I mean, that's the gist of it, right? But it's so an ID is an attribute, and a class is an attribute. Mm-hmm. Just say,
rel.
Yeah. They are, in a way, you know. It's just that there are shortcuts in CSS to do that. So if a div has a class of module in your CSS, it will be dot module. But this, you know, that you could write that same exact selector a different way. You could put a square brackets around it and say class equals module. That's the same exact selector. It even has the same exact specificity weight.
One way I like to think about it is like the href is an attribute. So like you'd have like all A links, right? A bracket color blue, right? But then you want all your Google links to be hot pink. So you say A bracket href equals http://google.com and bracket color hot pink or whatever.
So you've targeted links just based on where they link to.
And so you can, once you kind of unlock like what these guys are doing, you know, you can, in HTML5, you have these things called data attributes, which you just say data hyphen anything I want equals anything I want. Then you're like making your own magic spells. You're not just limited to like the HTML5 attributes. So one thing I was, Chris and I were talking, Chris did that post. You did that post, Chris, about, our responsive search filters.
Oh yeah. Did I use them in there?
And, well, no, I was going to say I was messing with it and I used a details element, and details has a open attribute for whether it's open or closed. And you can do like styling based off of that. So details bracket open, like background hot pink, you know, as opposed to just when it's collapsed, you don't have any background, right? But when it is.
So this is an interesting scenario in attribute selectors, is that a lot of times you'll use an attribute selector when it's equal to something. So href equals http://google.com, but you don't necessarily have to. If you don't put equals something, you can select on just it having that attribute at all. So in this case, details and then in square brackets open. And that comes up once in a while, like I might have a selector called label square brackets 4 and then say cursor equals pointer. So if that label isn't clickable to attach to something, the way that you make labels clickable to go to their inputs is with a 4 attribute. So if a label has a 4 attribute, then it should have cursor equals pointer. But if it doesn't, then it doesn't need it. So that's the kind of thing. Have you ever used an attribute selector for something recently, Jeff, that you can remember?
Yeah, recent site. I remember using one for the pseudo attribute, or the where you match whether or not it begins or if it contains.
Yeah.
Those kind of fancy selectors have helped in recent projects. I can't remember which one though.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing that you can't write a class selector, and I'm talking about in CSS like dot module and then curly brackets for the thing. You can't say this class starts with grid dash or something. There's no way to write that with the dot notation, but you could write, and I have used this recently, square brackets, class name, and then the up arrow, you know, like shift 6 on your keyboard, I guess, up arrow equals, and then say grid dash in quotes. So that will select any element that has a class name, and let's say you have class grid 1, grid 2, grid 3, grid 4, it will select all of them because that class name starts with grid dash. And there's not just starts with, there's contains, there's ends with, there's all these things.
And with various support, with various browser support.
Yeah.
I mean, as you go back, not all of them are supported, but these days, you know, it's.
That's a good point. And it's a lot. IE7 is the cutoff for a lot of it.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I would say I still use them just for like progressive enhancement. Like I don't depend on them per se. Yeah. So that's maybe something you...
A trick I heard recently about these that's relevant to some recent topics is that I've kind of been beating the let's not use IDs in CSS drum here for a little bit. And I wasn't always on that way, but I feel pretty strongly about it now and how using too many IDs on a large project. And I'm not, you know, and I'm not dogmatic about this. I'm just saying in my projects, I've stopped using IDs in my CSS. In JavaScript, it's fine, but I've stopped using it in CSS and I've liked what it's done. To my CSS, like the lower level of specificity has been great for me. But a lot of people are saying, well, IDs, you know, they mean something. You know, they can be links. They're good for JavaScript. There's all this stuff. So why avoid using them in HTML? I'm not really saying don't use them in HTML. I'm just saying don't style with them. But there's a way that you can take an ID down a notch. And you can use, instead of using the hash, which is the notation for like if there is div ID equals one, you can write hash one to select it in CSS. Well, that particular selector has very heavy specificity, about as heavy as it gets, just under important. Or you could write square brackets ID equals one, and that selector has the same specificity as a class would.
Interesting.
You know what I mean?
Interesting. Yeah, that's very interesting.
So it's kind of like you can use IDs, but not have the problems of specificity.
So what's
hacky?
What's the deal with IDs though? They're okay to use once in a while, or just you recommend never including them?
If you draw a line in the sand and say you include them in the markup if you need them for JavaScript, or if you need them for a hash link, or if you need them for any other of IDs abilities other than styling. And if you need to style it, then just put a class name that has the same name and just use that as a class. Just so your specificity level playing field is flatter. And it just feels better. Just try it.
Yeah, I will. That is interesting. I had picked up on a little bit of the debate about that, but I still use IDs for like the main branches.
Sure, and your life isn't over, right? So, like, I'm not trying to say that that's a disaster and you're a bad programmer because you do that. That's what I'm not saying. But try it, you know, like, once in a while you'll run into something that, especially on particularly large projects, that you end up, you know, fighting yourself a little bit with that ID.
Yeah, but IDs do go both ways. I mean, they do communicate information as well. And if you come across an ID in your CSS, you know that it means something and that there's a reason that it's there, right? I mean,
is there? What is that reason?
Well, obviously, there's some significance there. Perhaps it has to do with identifying some part of the document, you know, or it has something to do with the JavaScript or the CSS, something of more significance than a class. And I think
you're bringing that baggage with you, though. Like, you've decided that that's the case.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. It's just a tool. I mean, it's a tool for designers to use. I don't think there should be a stigma on IDs. That seems, because like you said, they're very powerful, and there are many situations.
So you've used that IDs to style now, and you've decided though that just because it has some significance to JavaScript, that it should have literally infinite more style specificity than anything else. I just think that's a lot. That's a lot to bring to the table.
It is. And I'm with great power, Chris, comes great responsibility.
It does
and you do have to keep the power tools locked up and only bring them out when the kids aren't around. But you know what I'm saying. I'm just saying there is a time and a place, and it's better to have the tools if you need them.
Sure.
Than to.
I'm not saying that. Certainly, they should exist in CSS. I think IDs to be removed from CSS.
I think you may be having an effect.
Well, perhaps. I don't.
An influence.
Good. I hope I am.
Yeah. Well, we all do.
Yeah. 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 Anyway. It's not a big deal. If you want to style some things with IDs in it and it's working out for your projects, then
yeah, it's not. It's you're absolutely right. It's just a talking point.
Certainly. Okay.
It took me about 4 years to learn you can't repeat IDs. So So I'm a dummy is what I'm getting at.
And that has some real meaning in JavaScript that differs across browsers. You know, you throw two IDs on the page. It will probably find the first one in the source order, but not always. And it will only find one of them and then stop.
Well, isn't that one of the rules of IDs, though, is that you can only include one?
Yeah, but CSS doesn't care. It'll style them both.
Yeah, but I think you're looking at the... I don't know. I think that it's up to the designer. You know, if the designer knows what he's talking about or knows what he's doing, then there's the standards will be followed. There'll be one on a page or none on a page, you know. And if used correctly, then you know it's okay. But I could be wrong. I don't know.
I think this is the subjective part of it. You know, but. Whether it works, or is that objective? I don't know. I'm not good at English. Well, should we wrap up? We're kind of going over time. Does this sound good?
Yeah, we started a little late, so I think we're okay.
Okay. I apologize for keeping everybody. Jeff, thanks so much for coming on the show. How can people follow you, get in touch with you, buy your books, give you money? How does that work?
I am on Twitter at Perishable, and my main website is perishablepress.com, and that's where I kind of do all my stuff or at least talk about it. So
yeah.
Sweet. Head over there, buy some books. Yep. Everyone else, thanks for coming out in the chat room. We really appreciate you guys. You really came in today to help out with that CMS question. Good job, everybody. And buy some shirts, shoptalkshow.com/store, maybe.
That's the one. I forget. Nailed it.
I forget.
That's it.
And follow us at Shop Talk Show on Twitter. Rate us up in iTunes. Just click the 5-star button. It's that easy. And Chris,
shoptalkshow.com.